Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Raised on songs and stories, heroes of renown, the passing tales and glories that once was Dublin town, the hallowed halls and houses, the haunting children's rhymes, that once was Dublin city in the rare old times.
Everybody, ring a ring a rosy. Nobody, as the lights decline, I remember Dublin City in the rare old times. Lads, you left me out to hang out to dry there.
Are we recording here?
We are recording, yeah.
We deserve it. We deserve
Self
it.
And Luke are a beautiful thing. Dublin's brilliance, lads. Let's start off with the Dubs because this has just been sensational. They're the first team to retain the trophy since Kerry 06, 07, but Kerry had changed their managers mid, you know, after the first win. So it's probably easier to impress a new manager. The Dubs are doing it with the same manager. So probably the first person since, was it Cork back in 89 maybe, yeah. Since who did it. Like an unbelievable team, an absolutely incredible team. Four All-Irelands in this decade and we're only at 2016. You know, they can add two or three more to that at least and, you know, just be an absolute dominating force in the country, and that's just it. A brilliant, brilliant team.
Yeah, Conor, I don't know. I mean, you look at the 2011 teams, the team that played this weekend, they've evolved so much. You remember 2011, they developed a zonal defensive system and they ran with that and they won it. And then Jim came on board, fair enough, 2012, he couldn't defend it. Jim came on board with the 2013 with the ultra offensive game plan. That's the way he wanted to play football, based on Dublin of the 50s when Heffernan was in charge. It was ultra offensive, everybody bombing forward, and obviously they won it in 2013. It was going to be the template for the next 10 years, and then Jim McGuinness caught Dublin on the hop in 2014, and they refined their tactics again, and it's just that he's a very learned manager, Jim Gavin, and he knows what works and what doesn't work, and they tweaked the system. But he said himself it was just the overall framework remained the same. He still wanted to play offensive football, open expansive football, but they were mindful of protecting their full back line that they hadn't done 2014, and they still go on and win tomorrow, will you? And I know you just want to get off that, but like for the team to evolve in 2011 into what played every weekend, that for me shows a class team
100%. And I want to talk about the way it has evolved, because like you said in 2011, I think Gilroy had to play that more conservative approach because Dublin had been shipping hammerings. Dublin were weak mentally. Look where Dublin have come since then.
2009. It was all because of 2009.
The start of Learwigs.
Dublin were going to hammer Kerry in that All-Ireland semi-final. And in 2010, if you remember, they came back at the All-Ireland semi-final against Cork, and you know, they slowly but surely built. Yeah, yeah. And then 2011 was the, you know, eventual success. Sorry, Colin.
I think evolve is the big word there. Did you see that picture Dermot Connolly put up? They were just a group of them in the warm-up area with the trophy, and behind them there's a quote from Charles Darwin, and it's talking about natural selection and how, you know, you have to be perfect for your environment. But the message that was being hammered home in this particular quote was that it's not about the individual, it's about the group, and natural selection with the group and survival of the fittest, but it has to be part of a group. And that shows sort of how they evolved over the last few years. But even between the two games, the drawing game and the replay game, they sort of learned so much from it and sort of changed the way they were setting up.
Yeah, and not I believe, so much the way they set up, they changed personnel, and they worked really well. 2013, I think Jim Gavin gets a lot of credit. Kilkenny came on the scene in 2012. He brought in Paddy Andrews, gets a lot of credit for bringing him in and playing him a little bit more. Johnny Cooper has been an absolute revelation, ignored by Gilroy. Jack McCaffrey is a no-brainer. He came up. Paul Mannion is a no-brainer. Dean Rock was, you know, could have been there. Darren Daly came in. He started Philly McMahon. Philly was only a sub under Pat Gilroy. So it's not like he took on the team that won and said, look, I'm going to continue on with this. You know, he's made the team his own. He's brought in a lot of new faces, fellas he would have fancied when he was obviously watching Dublin as a fan.
And yeah, he made hard calls. Mick Fitzsimons was a nailed on cornerback for me for the next 10 years. Fair enough, man the match last weekend, but he was warm on the bench. Johnny Cooper's in. What Jim's idea, I suppose. And again, you talked about the collective. It was all about the collective, Conan, in terms of Dublin winning. Individual flair is allowed within the collective framework. Yeah, you know, that's why Jack McCarthy was allowed. Boris Farr, they weren't going to say to him, Jack, you need to sit back and mark our half forward. You're going to be bombing forward. He got caught out once or twice, wasn't it? Kerry that caught him out there, Gooch, a couple of balls in behind Jack McCarthy in that great semi final a couple of years ago. Other than that, but anyway, Mick Johnny Cooper comes in cornerback because what Jim wants is ball playing cornerbacks.
Yeah,
you need to be able to kick the ball with both feet. Be aware, you know, when Mick was a mauler, you know, a guy you'd hate to mark, and that just shows the mindset of Jim and the team at the time.
And Philly McMahon too is the ultimate footballing cornerback. You know, he's got everything to his game. So there is a lot that Jim has brought to football. My complaint with Jim is that he's not the most inspirational type of fella, you know, with outside of it. But the players all seem to play for him, and he seems to have authority.
Who cares? He doesn't care.
Well, I know he doesn't care, but
he doesn't need to inspire you. You get out of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You have to be like Jim McGuinness would have inspired.
He's a different character.
I could see from Jim McGuinness from his personality in interviews to say, I can see where you know this fella is the massive leader of men that he is. Jim Gavin not so much, but look, maybe he's just turning it on and off.
I think Jim Gavin's probably the start of maybe a new era of management, like where you look at the NFL and you look at some of the rugby coaches. They don't need to be on the pitch and roaring and shouting and maybe giving off these amazingly inspirational quotes. Like they've got the work done. They've prepared diligently, so once it comes to game time, there's nothing really you can do. There's no point in sort of jumping up and down and saying something motivational. It's probably just the work has been done. I always think when you see a manager going mad on the sideline, it sort of smacks of somebody who's unprepared, but obviously Jim Gavin's definitely never unprepared.
I thought the game against Donegal, he was unprepared that day and he just sat there, you know, meekly when it didn't make any changes. So, you know, but anyways, I don't want to be negative about him. He was ruthless dropping the three fellas. Mm. And Michael Dermacall, he was a sensation when he came on. He was like a madman. Fitzsimons was excellent. That completely worked. Paddy Andrews was quiet enough. And the other change, Flynn went to midfield and he had a much better game than he had been having. So the changes worked, and the easiest thing to do is to not make those changes. So again, Jim Gavin, massive amount of credit. And the fellas that got dropped, the attitude they showed when they came on, Staggan from Bernard Brogan, no face on him, I'm better than this. Humble. The one thing about the Dublin players, and I would like to see Dublin beaten because I don't like teams dominating. I'd like an underdog to win, and that's what I root for. But Dublin are an incredibly likable team to watch. They're unbelievable to watch. And their players are humble, and there's none of this cocky Dubs that...
They're good winners.
A reason we might have hated Dublin when you were playing, no offence.
Yeah,
Senate,
absolutely.
But they played up to that cocky kind of Dublin thing. They've completely gone away.
There's
from
a humility
that.
About the Dublin team. And it comes from management. You know, it really does. That Jim will not accept it. And if you go outside that, you will not play. Because they're the fine margins. I think Jim wants everything to fit. It's round pegs and round holes. And that includes your personal life, your sports life, your work life. Everything has to come together for you to perform on the pitch.
Yeah, that's it. I hear they're not even allowed read newspapers.
Well, will you stop? People are talking to me during the week, and people in media are saying to me, Ireland O'Gara's in. I said, will you hold on? It's North Korea, Dublin, okay, and Kerry the same, and Mayo the same. Only drip feed, all top teams drip feed out information you want to get into media.
I heard from a player's father, not directly, that he's not even allowed to read the newspaper in his own house because his son can't see them. I'm telling you.
But does he read online?
I don't want to say who that is, but it is like North Korea.
I can picture him just running around the paper. Here he is!
The papers. He has to read the newspaper down in the shop and leave it down there.
That's brilliant.
It's North Korea. Right, before we move on to a bit of analysis, we've obviously got no reaction from the Dublin camp. It's not a huge surprise to me, after all early. I don't know.
Did you not text anybody today?
I text a good few of them, but the pickup has been pretty quiet. They're obviously all on the beer. And I'm not sure if I'm in the bad books with them for some reason. I shouldn't be, because I think I'm trying to be fair to them. I want to talk about Brian Fenton before we move on any further, lads. An unbelievable statistic. Played 22 with Dublin, won 20, drawn 2. 2 Leinsters, 2 All-Irelands, 2 leagues. He's never lost a game with Dublin. Never lost a competition.
Yeah. 2 Burn Cups.
He's only won one Burn Cup. Longford beat them this year.
Yeah, Longford, the only team to beat Dublin this year.
The only team, yeah. Longford for Sam. But Brian Fenton, all-star last year and possible player of the year this year. Man of the match in last year's All-Ireland final. This is a fella, lads, and you can ask anyone in Dublin. This fella wasn't earmarked as this, you know, Kieran Whelan in the making.
Can
like,
I give you the background to where this came from? He was, his clubmate O'Higgins, big tall blondie fella on the Dublin 21s a few years ago. Minor in 21, Desi would have had him underage. I don't think he would have played in Jim's teams. No, he didn't. And the management sort of, you know, would always been a lookout. Desi's team, they're always on the lookout, come 21s for another player, you know. And they sort of said to Higgins, is there anybody we're missing around in club football? And O'Higgins sort of said, look, well, or Higgins said, my own club mate Brian Fenton is moving well. And lads, we've sort of looked at him closely down through the years. He said, well, he's flying at the moment. Went and watched him in the league game, catapulted not only into the panel, into that 21 team, and then boom, off you go.
My God.
From nowhere. So a late comer. And it just proves that, like, Bernard had never played minor for Dublin. Fenton came from nowhere as well. So it can actually happen, you know. And that's, he was catapulted in on a pure, just general conversation, you know, nice and, just as simple as that.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. Now he's like the dominating force. The Mike Hawleys and the Bastics have to fight to see who's the partner. And the one thing brilliant that he gives
Emmett
Dublin
O'Connella. What about Emmett O'Connella?
Yeah, he was
not even in the mix.
Yeah, he's not even in the mix. The one thing he does is that, you know, all these fellas can say you can push up on Cluxton's kickouts, push up. Now Dublin have that option in midfield where Jim Gavin went with Keane O'Sullivan and Bastic first. Like, they didn't have that long, you know what I mean? They had to rely on Cluxton's brilliance. Now they can just knock it out to Fenton if needs be, and Cluxton went longer a good bit at the on Saturday more than he usually did.
And actually, the idea, we don't want to get too much into the analysis here, but the idea of Mayo trying to go a bit longer was completely sort of made redundant by Fenton as well, because he just went up and boxed everything down. And as you said last week, Dublin won all those breaks,
all the breaks.
It was very pointed, wasn't it, Conor? Yeah. Dublin were going hard after them breaks with clenched fists and
I always love a midfielder that breaks the ball, and I'll tell you why. Because when you're a midfielder trying to catch, the fella who breaks the ball is dictating where the ball goes, so he's controlling it. The chances of a clean catch is minimal. You always break it, and you can dictate, and you tell lads around you, where do I always break it in front of me, you know, will I break it one side. This idea that you're fetching ball in midfield, the fella that fetches is not the fella who, you know what I mean, generally the lad that breaks it, his own man will win it. And like, Dublin did that brilliantly at the weekend. I don't think there's any doubt. Just from that 2011 team, the only ones, Cluxton's still there, Keane O'Sullivan, James McCarthy, Dear McConnelly, Paul Flynn. Those five lads.
What names he's thrown out gone?
Well, Gerard Brennan, Kevin Nolan, the forgotten man of Dublin football. He's gone.
Man of the match.
Barry Cahill. Yeah, he's man of the match that day. Barry Cahill, Brian Cullen, they hung around in 2012 and then retired. Alan Brogan's gone. Rory O'Carroll's not around there. You know, but there's five fellas. Yeah. Like, I mean, Flynn and Connolly have been, you know, and Cluxton and James McCarthy, Keane O'Sullivan. Those five lads have four starting All-Irelands. And they're the focal point and the backbone of the team.
Yeah, and Cluxton and Connolly have played every minute of those starting All-Ireland finals as well. Started and finished, and that's incredible turnover though in 5 years.
It's an incredible turnover in 5 years from a good All-Ireland winning team, you know. But it often is the case when a new manager comes in, they want to put their own stamp on, you know, and make it, I don't want to win with his team, I want to win with my own team. But the Johnny Cooper thing, honest to God, Jim Gavin deserves a lot of credit for Fenton. Most credit for Fenton, Philly McMahon and Johnny Cooper, because they're his lads. They've, you know, and he's coached them well. He's turned Fenton in from an also-ran into an unbelievable... Cooper, I've said it before on the podcast, I mark Cooper. I didn't think he was that great. Like, I didn't think he was a tight marker. He looked like a footballer, no real size, not intimidating. Wasn't brilliant going forward, didn't go forward that much. And now this man... Like,
he's the opposite of everything you just said.
He's indestructible now. He's indestructible, and he got shafted. We'll talk about this. It was a lousy black card on him there in the middle of the field. Anyways, we'll leave it at this. And we're going to get into some quality Marty Squad-esque black card analysis back after
you
this.
You give us a song before we did.
You ready? Let's go!
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, and it does happen. Yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot. And the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
you know. Actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name, on your program, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, back in club and county.
Okay, black cards, lads. We're going to start off the analysis with black cards. We're going to analyse the black cards. Usually I don't do it, but it really pissed me off at the weekend, if I'm being honest. Me and Conan disagree. Surprise, surprise. Johnny Cooper. Okay, now let's start in chronological order, right? John Small, blatant black card, completely ignored. Blatant. And he gave the free. So what was he giving the free for? Only a trip. Blatant, horribly stupid decision. He had to go.
Was
early
it blatant
doors. Stupid. How could he not give that? I remember tweeting at the time, there'll be no black cards here today, lads. Maurice Deegan's not in the mood for a black card.
There was the terms of engagement set
straight
on
away.
That one.
Straight away. So then Johnny Cooper does one where he's fouled. Vaughan's not exactly away into an ocean of space. He's just turned him over in the middle of nowhere, and Cooper instinctively grabbed his. By the letter of the law, it's a black card. I wouldn't be given a black card for that. End of story. Now, I don't know about the two of you. What do you think? Was Cooper?
Cooper?
John Small. We're not even going to argue about John Small. That was a black card.
Yeah.
If anyone says it wasn't, get out.
I think Cooper got the black card that Small didn't get.
Maybe.
That's what I think.
Maybe. But then again, if Cooper does that, Cooper sees John Small not getting it. You see, I'm entitled maybe. And Cooper just didn't think, and I didn't think it was. Look, I don't think it was a black card. Now, let's get on to the Lee Keegan one. I'm on the opinion that Lee Keegan was hung out to dry by Dear McConnelly. Dear McConnelly sewed him up good and proper. Yes, Keegan pulled his jersey. Was
so in terms of Connolly played the tackle very
well. Connolly went to ground and made it look like he was pulled out and then started sticking an imaginary black card in Deegan's face. Completely out of order by Connolly, you'd have to say. Yes, his jersey was pulled. Was it enough for him to be falling down? No, he threw himself to the ground and he sewed Keegan up up the river.
Well, we had a raging argument about this earlier. The whole office just went quiet because we were really getting into it. I've got two points on this. I think the first point, it was enough. I think Keegan was pulling him. I think he was caught in the hop because there was a mistake behind him. Keegan was pulling him and then he sort of reaches with his arm at the other side. Connolly's going. I mean, we've seen him with Menemen later on. Like when you're pulling someone, that's enough to sort of make them fall forward.
Connolly's 6'2". He's about 14 and a half stone. His jersey got barely pulled, and he's gone onto the ground.
I think it was
a professional foul. It was a soccer style. I'm sewing my man up here, and he got Keegan sent off, and more power to him. And you know, but he definitely did. I think he definitely sewed Keegan up there on that one.
I think it was enough. I think they clattered into each other and. It stopped him going through on goal, which he wanted to do. Secondly, then, I think, I mean, we were arguing about it as well, I think the terminology needs to change. I mean, like, Mayo fans are sort of trying to get away with it on a technicality by saying he wasn't pulled down to ground.
But that's
still denied.
That's the wording of it.
And so I'm saying that's the second point. I would change that as well.
That's why Connolly went to ground.
I think there was enough.
Do you know what I mean? To get him the black. And he was waving the black. He knew exactly what he was doing.
But I think that needs to change. I mean, the idea of the black card is to stop Senegal forward. So I don't think there's a difference between just pulling someone's jersey and stopping them going through and bringing them to the ground. It's the same sort of idea at Senegal.
I would agree. I just don't think how much Keegan pulled him that he
was enough to put him on the ground.
Pull him to the ground, or even enough to pull him back. Like they're both trying to wrestle to get that bit ahead. And sometimes you'll grab a lad by the shoulder. Is it enough to bring him down? Connolly just, you know, accentuated it.
Yeah, that's why I love him. Brilliant. I love him for that. He knew in that situation that I have this fella here now. And believe me, they weren't reading all the media reports that were coming out last week. They were just getting on with it, another battle as well. He knew what was happening in that situation.
No, they're not allowed to read the media.
Yeah, you better read. Exactly. So he went to the ground, perfectly played it well, Grant. So two things I need to throw into the mix here. The first one on the Johnny Cooper one. Stephen went short to Johnny on his one. And Johnny was out to be down for about 5 minutes. You remember? He was actually being clattered into after the goal situation. Johnny was still a bit dazed. He got a ball, he got a scutter, he won, and then got it back and went in a run, lost the ball, and in his head he was thinking, shit, I'm in trouble here. And instinctively he just put his arm around his only Vaughan. That was the lead up to that one. And the lead up to the Keegan one was a bad kick out from Clark, which I'm sure we're going to talk about later on. But still, there you go. There's your lead up to both things.
Or by Henley.
By Henley,
Yeah, then Bernard Brogan had the most blatant black card you'll ever see in a
Well, I don't remember this one.
Late part of the game, he just got a corner pulled him back.
Yeah.
And that's exactly when Mayo were trying to get back into the game. Bernard knew what he was doing. I'd say he was just saying, "I'll take a black card for the team," and slowed him down. He didn't get one there. Like, so it's an absolute mess.
That is a mess at the moment.
But I don't blame.
I'm a defender of the black card. Yeah. I am, but I think the main reason a lot of people have no interest in a black card is because of the penalty. You know, given for a black card, you're gone off in an All-Ireland final. Now, sin bin, 10 minutes, team's down to 14 men. It's a punishment, but it's not like the it's not the end of your whole year or your world. Now, let's make that tweak over the winter, because I'm getting tired of talking about this. You do feel sorry for the players.
You do feel sorry. Well, not really, in the way I look
at
it.
You do things at the spur of a moment, though, you know? I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, like, maybe that will come out of them then, eventually. Like, the way I look at it is, if a red card's wrongly given or it's not given, we don't criticise the red card, we criticise the referee. You know, it's like the red card still needs to be there. If someone punches a fella, like, we still need to have that punishment. And it's like, it's the same with the black card. If you give a black card rightly or wrongly, or don't give it, I don't think that's a problem with the card. Yeah. I think there's still,
I'm not saying to get rid of it. I think it should stay, but I just think the punishment should change.
It's my view. It's like, if you don't want to get sent off, don't point to that. And if you don't want to get a black card, then don't cynically foul him.
But John Small did cynically foul him. He didn't get one. So, like, I mean,
that's the referee's fault.
We'd expect Keegan to be physical and that physically robust in that situation, wouldn't we both? Or the three of us would. Yeah, exactly. And then, okay, that's what about this? There's three or four of us rolling around the ground, thumping the head off each other before half time. And noted a couple of yellows here and there. And Johnny Cooper and Lee Keegan are sitting in the stand for that's where the kills me.
The problem was, there were no cameras picked up how that started. Did Small pull him down before the start of wrestling, or did they both go down together? It didn't show what happened there outside of, if the two lads wrestling on the ground, then it is two yellows because we don't know how it. But John Small was on thin ice in that first half.
He could have gone
like, he should have gone.
That's probably what he took him late on.
When
the game is in a melting pot and it's a bit fractious there, and they put Lowndes in. But I love, and we're talking about the Dublin players here, but Killian O'Connor's reaction to that one was so, what was he like, an under 12 kid? Hold on a minute, he's pulling me back. He was after being involved. Look, Grant, we're not slating the Mayo players here, but he put a bit of a headlock himself, and then he's slapping the ground. What age is this fella?
You're banging the desk there. Sorry, there. That's
where he's getting very animated. Everyone's ears are being blown off them.
Bong, bong.
It was like he was like getting him in a headlock, hoping that Small would react. And then Small did sort of swing, but I think he was swinging at his arm.
That's all he was. He was only swinging to get
and
free.
And then O'Connor seemed to be upset that it didn't work, and he started punching the ground.
Okay, the other black card was the most obvious one and put poor Henley out of his misery. And that's where I want to start talking about is, you know, the, like, Joe Brawley. Sometimes I complain about Joe Brawley, but, like, I mean, when he said, in his Sunday piece, Mayo keep finding new ways to lose. Like, I mean, they do. Let's call a spade a spade. Like, two OGs the last day. Like, I mean, today they go and change their goalkeeper from a solid Clark to Henley, who's got a little, like, is a bit kamikaze at times. Like, is in huge fault against Galway.
Galway
was
the goal,
last year against Dublin, he had a disaster. So you're coming in against the team who you had a disaster against last year. Well, I think it was at fault for definitely one of the goals anyways, with a kick out, and he was only putting his gloves back on. Do you remember that?
Yep.
And then this year, he's in an All-Ireland final replay. The tension was unbearable for me watching it. He's standing in front of Hill 16. And this fella's supposed to produce a good performance. And his brief is to go along with the kickouts. Like, I mean, the poor chap had no chance. Like, he's not even given the easy option of a little cornerback tip. His brief was to go a bit longer, which is a much more difficult thing to do. His first three kickouts all went long to a Mayo man completely stranded on his own. Fenton or whoever the Dublin lad was around, breaking it down to a
from behind, with a 5 yard run from behind. Yeah.
And no Mayo fell in under the break.
No one.
An uncontested break, they're winning. So it's like, that was absolute madness from Rochford.
I think mentally the margins are tighter for a guy like him going in. He cannot make a mistake. For Clark can, even in his own brain, he has the fallback of, you know, he was nearly a guaranteed all-star. I don't know if he's going to be now, but he has that fallback. So he's allowed a couple of mistakes, but even himself in between his own ears, he'll know, look, I need to settle now and maybe go short. Whereas Henley could not make a mistake full stop all day.
Yeah.
He just couldn't. Yeah. That was the pressure that was actually heaped on him subconsciously.
Yeah.
Obviously not talked about in the change room, and the management believed in him. But I think, man, that fella going out there, one bad kick out, shit, I'm in trouble here. You know what I mean? We need to do it. And then the second and the third, the wheels came off.
It was a disaster. He took 13 kickouts and Mayo only won 7 of them. But, you know, it's the Lee Keegan bloody black card, lad. He got his best player a black card with a crappy kick out. Terrible kick out. And there was no that was not a difficult kick out. If you see the replay, he was completely free. Yeah. It was just a terrible lack of concentration. Tomás O'Shea is right in the Sunday game. He easily could have waited for the one instead of trying to catch it over his head. Just wait. Andrews wasn't even there in front of him. Yeah. He just ran out under the ball, yeah, made it way harder on himself, and instead of just collecting it into his chest, maybe 3 yards back a bit further. Like, he just had lost it. Like, and he should have been taken off at half time, in my opinion. He definitely should have.
That's the big mistake,
yeah,
I think.
Rochford, by doing that, is admitting, I messed up here. And yeah, I think he wasn't prepared to admit he messed up. You know,
he has to act there and not react, yeah, then. Like, you know, it was too late. Like, they sort of got away with it to an extent. All right, they lost Lee Keegan, but it looked nervous. He had made a few mistakes. Just take him off at half time. You've got a really good goalkeeper in there. Yeah. Like, and actually, yeah, you could see the confidence of Clark then when he came
totally
back.
Totally safe pair of hands.
He strolled on. He was making Connolly wait for as long, yeah, as possible. He was right in front of us there. He just really, yeah, was looking around. He fixing his gloves. I'm going to make this fellow. It was class. You know, yeah, give us a run on. Get me into this game quick. Yeah. He was so controlled and very measured. And I'm sure in his own brain he knew where Connolly was going to put it. McEntee, someone came down, one of the selectors came down to McEntee in his ear. McEntee bursted down the line into Clark, obviously to tell him, look, you're going. Connolly's going to that corner. Yeah. You know,
bottom left is the default for all penalty takers. All right footed penalty takers in the high pressure situation will always go bottom left. And Clark knew that. Yeah. The penalty was so bloody good.
It was
unstoppable.
And during his Dermo, the best thing that happened to Dermo this season was missing that penalty against Leash. Because he went nice height, remember, into the corner, yeah, there, was tapped away, and then he went back to it. No way, this is my default one, yeah, into the corner, and it's happening, you know.
Yeah, low left.
In Henley's defence, well, not defence really, but Rochford's like defence a bit. Like, Henley was sort of a contributor to the goal, the Mayo goal. He found, was it Vaughan and the winger, was Seamus O'Shea. It sort of started the build up to the goal, and Seamus O'Shea found Aidan, who found Lee Keegan, and maybe that was working in training throughout the last 2 weeks, and he was finding these men over the top, and
yeah,
it only worked once, of course, and the mistakes were worse than what that gave them in the end. But yeah, like, you'd probably see maybe that's where it was coming from.
Yeah, no, I'd look at that. There's no doubt that was a mistake. Another couple of things on Mayo before we move on to Dublin is they brought on Barry Moran, you know, for the last quarter of the game, say, and him and Aidan O'Shea went into the full forward line. No ball went into them. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, if you're
got
bringing
one
them,
ball and one score one ball, only, and it sort of it bounced. Fouled. It wasn't even a bit. Yeah. It was
fouled, yeah, for a tap over free. Colin Boyle tried to kill him by giving him a ball out in front of him. Now, Barry Moran shouldn't have been breaking out for that ball. That was both of their faults. But is this not their plan? It was obviously their plan B. So when players on the field see Barry Moran coming on and Aidan O'Shea going in beside him, is that not worked on that when this happens, this is going in diagonal and long? And they just didn't do it. It was like they completely panicked and went, like, why not have used that big man?
I'd say it was, you know, I thought they were tactically very astute since the Tyrone game, where they customised their team to play against Tyrone. The last day against Dublin, I thought their matchups were there. Tactically, they were so astute. And then this happens. It was like as if it just fell apart. Surely, when you see Barry Moran coming on, everybody knows, let's go, it's going route one. Yeah. So, was it a breakdown from the players' point of view? I am sure. The guys like Donny Buckley and McEntee, you've Stephen Rochford there. I'd say that was drilled into the players. It just fell down on the pitch. Maybe the pressure, that situation, that it just didn't kick in. And it has to happen. Whereas if that was Dublin on the flip side and they were going plan B, I think because they're so used to All-Ireland finals and they are a little bit more controlled and measured, that if they saw that signal a guy went in, it would actually happen within their own framework. There's a change. It's change in emphasis. That's what we call it. Change emphasis. And when you get a signal and you go with it and it has to happen, that's the management and All-Ireland finally making the call. Because we all know, and Croke Park, the manager, they can shout all day. The players can't hear them.
No, you can't get the message.
So Barry Moran runs on. Boom, we're going route one.
I don't know that sentence. I haven't got a clue.
Trust me, one of two memories of mine in Croke Park when the crowd gets loud, you're wing forward and you're shouting at the top of your voice at the centre half forward, and there's no, he doesn't, his head isn't even turning.
So it's sort of like Owen Big and Derry. It's probably something similar.
similar to that. That's where those club ones is where you can hear the Parkinson, you wanker, much clearer. Like, you can't hear the abuse. That's one good thing about the crowd in Croke Park. You cannot hear any, even from the hill. Yeah. You just can't hear anything. It's just a collective noise.
I remember getting absolutely lambasted in front of the stand. You know, one of these little stands where everyone packs into, and I was playing cornerback at the time. The manager pulled me over in front of everyone. The ball was dead. Someone was injured. And he just let rip, like, what is going on? Get your head out of your ear.
It's your own manager.
People, yeah, and you can hear people laughing and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, just take me off.
What else? Oh yeah, the reason Barry Moran was brought on, lads, is because Killian O'Connor, Andy Moran, were getting no change out of Doherty either, right? Killian O'Connor frustrates me, and I'd love to have had a TV to show this analysis, because there was more times. But Andy Moran will break, he'll at least break. So he's leaving the space there, and he brings Keane Sullivan with him. That ball's not on to Andy Moran. Now, the second ball, Killian O'Connor has a one-on-one inside. Killian doesn't show for those balls. Now, he's not fast, so he's under pressure. His man's marking him from the front, but he's too close to goals. If Killian moves out a little bit, at least the over-the-top ball is on. There's no ball on for him. Standing in behind his man, with a man standing in front of him, and he's so close to the goals that there isn't even the threat of getting him one over the top. The amount of times there's Mayo fellas and they're passing around the 45 and they're looking up. Mm. And Killian won't make that run to get out in front. At least give them some option. And then there's a turnover because they're so crowded. But when Andy Moran breaks and gives you that space, Killian, you have to make that break. You have to make that hard run. I know it's not easy when you're being marked from the front, because I hated that. And it can get very demoralising if you're not that fast. And, you know, not me, I was obviously very fast. But if you're being marked from the front, and you know you're not that fast to get out in front of him, but Killian's not making left right runs. Yeah. He's not making any run. It's like, Jesus, Killian, even if you make a run, you're leaving space for someone else to run into. But his movement, and I saw it so many times, he was frustrating the life out of me that he's not making those hard runs,
and he's a lot of grass to work with. Yeah. Because the space is being left by Moran, and that is a dream.
Moran's taken Keane out, Keane Sullivan out with his initial run, because he's selfless with his runs. Now that's when Killian should come alive, but he doesn't. So,
no, and what was actually happening, like you saw with the goal, at least in one occasion, that Aidan O'Shea was bringing Keane O'Sullivan out. Like, they were occupying Keane O'Sullivan well and making him run. And as you said, Simon, there was so much space in. Like, oh, but it just seemed to be Andy Moran, Andy Moran, Andy Moran, or nothing.
Yeah.
Well, if it was, I'd expect an inside forward. What you're telling me then is he's not an inside forward, because an inside forward for me, if I played with Jay or Mossy inside and we were playing with Dublin, they were, their man had to, But the fullback would have had to put his back to the ball and eyeball Mossy and Jayo, because they were shimming foot to foot. Yeah. They didn't know where they were going, and it was at that split second where the intuition or the telepathy with the outside player, when you're playing centre forward, they were gone into the space. But Killian doesn't do that. No. He's like, he's waiting. I want to go right. He's not thinking left, right. He doesn't seem to have that in him.
It's not that movement. But even if he came out and stood on the 14 or the 21, and at least the odd time point to go backward, you know what I mean, and because if his man's marking him from the front, he'll get spooked if he gets one over the top. Then he'll go, right, I need to maybe adjust here.
Keeps him honest.
And it avoids the fact of him always being out in front. Because like, if he's out in front, no one's going to give you in the ball. But if you get the odd one over the top, it'll spook him and make him maybe a bit, it's just, they don't have enough pace up front. That's the problem with Mayo. And I mean, Kevin McLaughlin being lost, Kevin McLaughlin eats up the space from the half-back line up to the half-forward line, runs into people. I'd nearly rather see him back up in the forwards. He's that game breaker. Is there anyone in the Mayo forward line that can actually get the ball, right? Say like Kevin McManaman, and you say, right, I'm wrecked. Will you just go win us a free or something? Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, stick it under your arm there. Yeah. Put it under your jumper.
Give us a handy. Go past him and get pulled down. You just don't have that with Mayo. Where
the other side, you have Connolly, you have Manning, you have McManaman, Kilkenny. Even. Yeah. Like, you have all those options.
There's nothing better than the odd time. Just, geez, we didn't do much to create a score here, but just go on. Do a dummy solo and put it over. You know what I mean? Get us a handy score that we didn't have to work hard for. Mayo just don't have that.
For me is still coming from Andy Moran, and he's on his last legs. Yeah. I think all year, and any of the games we've watched, he's the one that injects a bit of life into it when he makes his early runs. But what's happening then is he doesn't have the pace to go past the guy, so he's soloing on the spot, hoping to get a shot off or then lay it off. And you're right. I thought that Dermot O'Connor was going to be the guy that would drive at defences, win frees, you know, punch holes, but maybe just a long season for him.
Because he was quiet in both finals. Like, I mean, he got that point at the start of the second half, but you were just not seen in the game at all. And he is the game breaker. He's got the pace that can go past somebody and do what I'm talking about. But in the full forward line, you don't have a James O'Donoghue who's electric. Yeah. You know, I know Andy Moran is as close as you'll get to them, but like, Andy's not someone who can go past someone anymore either.
Maybe that's why. Well, that's obviously why Barry Moran came on, and it just wasn't used. Like, Mayo's backs were so on top, like they were so dominant, and they seemed to have the ball a lot. But
only three Dublin players, starting players, scored.
Yeah.
Rock, McManaman, and Connolly. That's all, and they only scored 4 points from play the starting players. Like, Mayo did brilliantly again, but like in the last 15 minutes, Dublin, I know, Costello got in for a few kind of handy enough scores. His last one was brilliant. Bernard should have had two or three. the space they were getting towards the end, you know, like Mayo had to come out and go for the game. If Dublin had been a bit more clinical, they could have won the game by 4 or 5, couldn't they really?
Yeah, but I'll credit the Mayo defence as well. I think it is one thing that's to go for Mayo. Mayo were very good. They weren't buying any sort of a solo at all.
No.
Anyway, I loved that from that Mayo defence.
Brilliant man on man defence.
Brilliant man on man. Like every one of us, you know, would obviously look, if he just buys this once, I'm in for a score. They just didn't do it. The amount of times Dublin tried to get on, even onto their weaker foot, which are very comfortable, it didn't happen. I love that from Mayo now, in fairness. But Costello was the ace in the pack because he had that injection of pace we talked about early on that Mayo didn't have start, and never mind coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And he has and his angles are running are very good, and he's comfortable on his weaker left foot.
Yeah, he's clever. But Michael Darren McCauley, lads, how many scores did he set up when he came on? At least three. Mm. And like, I mean,
the one for Brogan, that pass, that you remember the fist pass,
and a great run by Bernard as well, a great run, kind of new. But Michael Darrow was direct, he was determined. Like, Jesus, there's no ego there, it just doesn't matter. They're all putting their shoulder to the wheel. But he never gave up on that last one for Costello. Like, I mean, he could have just, all right, that's gone. He just threw his body at it and got a kick and ends up winning the point. The point that wins the All-Ireland.
There was one, he took a kick out from Stephen Cluxton. I think it was the second time of asking, but he got it, turned around, and he just shouldered Seamus O'Shea to the ground, and away he went. It was incredible.
Conor, with that one, it was a 2-on-1.
Yeah.
If he didn't win that, Mayo were in. If Stephen hit it to him, but there was no Dublin player within about 10 or 15 minutes. Don't really remember. He had to win that ball.
Yeah, it was 2
that
against
for me,
one.
There's your leader. That is brilliant.
And that's the scary thing, though. Like, they dropped Brogan, 2010 Footballer of the Year. They dropped McCauley, 2013 Footballer of the Year. And Rory O'Carroll wasn't there. Jack McCaffrey last year, Footballer of the Year. So many players weren't there, but 3 Footballer of the Years in the last 6 years.
That's the scary thing. Like, I mean, there's nobody on that team going anywhere. Bastic might go, but like, he might probably hang around for the 3 in a row as well. Who'd retire on 2? Like, the 3 in a row is a natural kind of retirement kind of thing if you were going to.
Yeah.
But you can't see any of them going, and a very young team. Like, this, I'm telling you, they'll win 3 of the next 4 and win, that'll be 7 in the decade. This will be as big a domination of a decade as the Kerry's in
the 80s. I don't buy it. I don't buy that at all. Well, you know, that's what I hated, even when Dublin won the second one. Oh, they'll win 5 in a row and all. Fairness, they haven't been too far off it, but the margins are so tight.
They've played 4 years under Jim Gavin, they've 3 All-Irelands.
I know, but right? Slim is the margins. They're not hockeying
teams.
Well,
that's true too, yes, but that shows they have character.
Yes.
And I think next year, for example, they could hockey. I think they're close to hockeying. You know, they're close to. They hammered Kerry last year in the final, not on the scoreboard, but they did beat them well. They hammered Mayo in the replay last year. They are hammering these teams, just not actually in finals. You know, they're a long way ahead of these teams, I think.
Well, Mayo are there. Like, this is an amazing rivalry that's
going
on.
They're not good enough, though, Mayo. Like, when it comes down to it, they're always chasing those
games. They're not good enough for Dublin.
Yeah, for Dublin.
And I was making the point earlier to you about Andy Murray. It's like, you know, Andy Murray is one of the best ever tennis players. It only has a handful, not even, of Grand Slams. And if he was in a different era, he would win. He would clean up. And I think it's the same with Mayo. They are, like, they're so far ahead of everybody else. And they're right there with Dublin. They're not maybe not good enough to beat them. But this rivalry is something else. It's like Djokovic Murray nearly, but all it's missing now is Mayo's success. So you can say these are 2 proper champions.
Yeah, it's not a rivalry until Mayo can beat them. And like, Mayo beat them in 2012, but like we just said at the top of the show, they're completely different team. The Dublin team is completely different. That 2012 Dublin team was a team that had just won the first All-Ireland. They'd celebrated a lot, they'll admit that themselves, and Gilroy didn't really freshen it up the following year. He left all his kind of soldiers that won it for him in 2011. So Mayo haven't beaten Jim Gavin's Dublin ever, I don't think, in league or championship.
No, and they're not rootless.
So is it a rivalry?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, but do you know that rootless streak, I think they were lacking in the semis of the last 2 years. I think they nearly have it. And Tomás O'Shea wrote about, they need another forward or another 2 forwards. Yeah. And now is the time to tap into that underage talent and find it. Like, someone's telling me there's 10 fellas waiting to get into this. Just find one for me, will you?
Yeah, but is there though? Because
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Because Rochford dropped Andy Moore. Like, he wants to move on from the team, a bit like Jim Gavin. And he just ended up having to go back to Andy Moore because there's nothing really there. It was a transfer system. They need a James O'Donoghue. They need a corner forward. They don't need a Gooch. They don't need any of these lads. They need a fellow with electric.
They don't need defenders.
No, they don't need defenders.
And a good midfield, solid midfield.
Yeah, they just need an exciting, explosive forward. Like, I mean, that'll make those runs and get those like 3 points that you need in an All-Ireland final from play or something like that, because they're so close. But I don't think it's in the county. I really don't. Tactically, lads, Kieran Kilkenny, my old buddy here, we talked about him so long. He come back a little bit to redeeming himself in my book after yesterday. He played, actually, I say there's absolutely no chance Jim Gavin listens to this podcast, but we did say he's slowing the ball down too much out around midfield, that he's too much hand passing, too much lateral nonsense, too much pointing at players telling them where to go. None of that at the
None
weekend.
Of it.
He played very close to the full forward line, so yes. It's obviously Jim saying keep him away from that middle third where he's slowing things down. And he was more direct, like the ball to Dean Rock for his first score was a beautiful ball, diagonal ball. That's what I want to see Kieran Kilkenny doing. His vision's brilliant, but he had stopped using it. He just, like, using hand passes, won a few really important balls towards the end, and, you know, was a really, had a really, really, really solid, good game with none of the nonsense that we've been criticising him about on the podcast here.
And he was forced to sort of take men on a bit more as well, because he was further up and they had a tackler confronting him straight away, and he suddenly realised he's had no problem taking these boys on, like, and he just went past a man. And then when that happens in a forward line, it's probably exactly what Mayo were missing. It opens everything up. If you take one man on, you've got a man over.
You're bringing opposition players towards you. Free some space everywhere.
And what he did at one stage, then he took on someone, and then I don't know how it happened, but John Smalls suddenly was bursting forward on the left hand side. He picked him out with his glorious little pass and should have been a score, and he was just sort of doing more things like that.
He turned down a couple of scoring opportunities. I don't know why this is in his head as well. He's as accurate as they come off both feet. I don't know why he doesn't fancy scoring anymore.
He was prolific underage. They talk about a prodigy coming through, and like talking about under 21 winning All Ireland, not with his club, and he was absolutely prolific, and it seems to be gone. And the strange thing is, he's an awkward sort of kicking style if you watch him. You know, it's very awkward. But this was extremely pointed in that first half, because we were right down at the wall there watching. Jason was manning the technical area, the rectangle. Jason was, and he was in and out to the forwards to hold him, and he was into Kilkenny. And you could see him up the park, back to position. In the first half, now Kilkenny did go deep second half, maybe it was needed, but it was very obvious, get up the park. And every time Kilkenny had the ball, instead of going backwards, which he's notorious, he was turning an eyeball on his man, nearly turning and looking for the pop pass eye. But that was, it was a clear change in tactic for Kilkenny. Because you asked me, what did Dublin work on the 2 weeks? There you go, that's what they worked on. Kilkenny gets on so much ball, they need to get more of a result out of everything from him. You know, the net result, is there going to be a score at the end of this?
Yeah,
very pointed.
Yeah, so Jason Sherlock was listening to the podcast. that's what it is. But it was, and like, it did help the Dublin forward line, and like, geez, in the first 4 minutes it looked like Dublin were just going to tear them apart, and then just kind of lost their way a little bit. But maybe Mayo deserve an awful lot of credit for that. Like, I mean, the goal from Lee Keegan was like, if a corner forward scored that, you'd say what a finish. Like, Jesus, he just has everything, that Lee Keegan. Maybe it's because it's Lee Keegan and we're like, he's such a great player and he's had such a great year that, you know, it's influencing your decision on the black card, because seeing him going off, that's the spiritual leader. That's like, I thought when I saw that, that's Mayo, forget about it. Although Cohen did all right when he came in.
Well, that's, and you don't, even if you like Connolly so much, you don't really want to see Keegan go, I love that battle. Like, I love this rivalry that's going on, that between the two counties, but between these two greats as well. Like, I think probably both of them are in contention for Footballer of the Year as well. Like, you know, that's how tight it is and how little margins. And actually, because I love Connolly so much, what I was doing then when Keegan scored the goal, I kept going back and watching replays and thinking, where the hell's Connolly? What happened? It mustn't have been his man. And then I saw it, like, when Seamus Boucher had the ball and he was looking up to find Aidan, Connolly had Keegan, but as the ball goes over his head, he sort of turns and he just sort of looks at the ball, and then it's just that split second, Keegan is gone, and that's all he needs. And Connolly was nowhere to be seen then, as Keegan's picking it up and
he
scoring.
Stole a march. Yeah. But you know what? They just cancel each other. How many times do you see the best footballer? Let's see. Like, if Lee Keegan marked me, he absolutely obliterates me, and I'm taking off. Whereas both managers cannot take either Keegan or Connolly off. They're on for the 70 minutes, and they just need to cancel each other out, or make sure that the margins of error are so tight between them. You know, they're just that good. They have to be on the park for 70 minutes, even if they're not touching the ball. No manager's going to risk taking one of them off, you know.
That's another thing Jim Gavin deserves a lot of credit for, is Connolly. And like, when Connolly started playing, like, he was a bit of a, you know, enigmatic type of character. You know, he was good one game, terrible another game. He's made him a leader. You know, he's just completely given him that responsibility that you'll never get taken off. And he was getting taken off under Gilroy, and he was on and off the team. You're never getting taken off, he's told him. You're my leader. And Connolly, to be fair to him, has really responded to that responsibility, because I don't think Connolly was even leader material when he started first. It's in, how will we keep this lad, you know, on the straight and narrow and keep his head right? And to go from that kind of maybe a little bit flaky, maybe if that might be unfair, to a fella who never gets pulled off, to a fella who's always, you know, there when Dublin kind of need him, working really hard and getting the important scores. So another thing Gavin deserves credit for. This is the Jim Gavin appreciation show.
Yeah. But his work rate from incredible. Between the 2.45s is incredible, because he doesn't get too many opportunities to shoot because of his physical dominance in that middle third. And here, just to give you a little anecdote, last year Alan Brogan's point in the All-Ireland final, and I was there, did a few pieces with Alan last year. That point, Alan got the ball in his own 21 and went in the burst up the park, remember? And if you look at that again, Dermot came bursting off a shot and ran into the corner and brought it on, what Kerry player with him, out of the space that Alan had. And Alan was looking to give him the ball, if you remember, and then people said, Alan's over Kerry, and yeah. Alan was looking to give him, and then realised Dermot was just running past his head down and then popped over the bar. But Alan said to Dermot afterwards, did you want that ball? And he says, I didn't, me fuck, I'm just making the space for you. That sums him up. That's late in the game where no one had legs. Yeah. Dermot's saying, I need to get this man out of the way, this is Brogy on the ball, he's going to pop this.
He's selfless. Boom, leader. He's completely selfless, Conlon. He's a Ferrari type player, but I actually wouldn't want Connolly doing the work that he does, or covering the amount of ground. I want him using all his energy off his left and his right and putting it over the bar and scoring goals. But that's the role Jim's given to him. And another fella, if this isn't a culture within the squad, would Dear McConnelly accept that type of a role? You know, this fella's scoring 2-8 in club games with just an attacking brief. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is the level this fella's at, can blow teams away. And like you often say, because you're in love with Dear McConnelly, best player you've ever seen, that it's because he's not racking up these big scores because of the work that he's doing. And he, like, obviously when you're marking Lee Keegan, you're going to cover a lot of ground following him.
I think if you put him further up where Kilkenny was on Saturday, or even where McManaman sort of finds himself in around that 45 and darting forward, like, you would see a lot more out of Connolly. Like, people say, oh, where's his 5 scores and stuff? He probably wouldn't get that many against Keegan anyway. Definitely wouldn't. But yeah, he's their deepest forward out of everyone. Like, he does so much work. And then you saw when Keegan went off, it wasn't even an attacking sense again what he was doing. It was taking the ball out of the fence. There was one time he came down underneath the Hogan stand and he was carrying the ball, and as he was doing it, he just sort of signaled to everyone to calm down. We're in the lead here, I'll turn around and I'm going to ping a pass the whole way across the other side. He's amazing, I'm going to cry here.
Yeah. That was brilliant. The calmness of that gentleman. There was a lot going on that side of the park. Just spread outside or right. I would have put that 40 yards back behind. He's scuttering back.
I never bunted
back.
I think players, and a lot of talk about the modern game and how, you know, it's not like it was years ago. Like, that's incredible game. Like, how these fellas, like, can perform under that kind of pressure. The tension. Like, I couldn't bear it.
It was two-to-finger stuff, wasn't it?
I could not bear it. Now, you're a dub, that's fair enough. I was neutral now, a bit of a graft for Mayo to win. But I could not watch that. Can you imagine playing down there in that kind of pressure? Mm.
Every mistake is magnified, Wooly.
The amount of intensity around the middle third, where you get a ball, you actually have to make your mind up immediately what I'm going to do with it, and that's not easy. Or else you're getting tackled and there's a turn. Yeah. Like, these lads are making these decisions not with time on their side, straight away. Yeah. And it's very rare hand passes don't go to hand or things. The odd mistake, but just shows the level the game has got.
Wooly, this is why, before Conor gets in, and I'm going to tell you, this is something that every team needs to work on. You look at when Dublin come into contact, the speed of their offload, even when they're going to ground, this might be my new, but I've watched the team develop. Even when they're going to ground with players, they still manage to offload the ball to a player when they're under serious pressure. Yeah. That's the difference between the top teams and maybe as you come down to the weaker counties. It is unbelievable what Dublin can do, and Mayo can match them, and Mayo are excellent tacklers.
Yeah.
With Donny Buckley there, we had him doing a couple of sessions. I don't know if you've ever come across this guy. He is a brilliant coach, a brilliant tackling coach. Mayo's tackling is probably the best in the country. I arguably say better than Dublin's defence, but they're so good in the offload. They weren't the last day because of the slippy ball, and Dublin were very conscious, because in the first game, Dublin go forward at breakneck pace. I don't know whether they were in wrong studs. They were hitting the brakes, slipping, and then Mayo were just, you know, engulfing them. And they were whereas the difference the last day, breakneck pace turn and then shipping it off under pressure. And that's the difference. They keep the ball alive. They don't get caught over carrying.
Yeah, no, they all do that. And I think Donegal kind of taught them that lesson about bringing the ball into tackles, because you do that against them and you're in big trouble. We'll finish up with Cluxton, lads. Captain, fantastic. Never seen a fella to look more uncomfortable smiling in all my life. Like, it just doesn't look natural on his face. Like, his more natural default setting is just a frown, isn't it? Like, you know, at a kind of an angry look. But, like, he's smiling, you know, lifting that cup, and it just doesn't look right on his face. But listen, I've said this 101 times. The greatest goalkeeper I've ever seen. Revolutionised goalkeeping. Goalkeeping now, you see, like, Stephen Cluxton caused Rochford to make that. Like, Stephen Cluxton changing the face of goalkeeping made Rochford indirectly make that change.
It was a long game.
A long game. He plotting this since 09. He's plotting it since 09. Yeah, someday I'm going to change goalkeeping because in a few years I will be in an All-Ireland and a Mayo manager will ruin his side by making a change. But his kickouts were brilliant. Like, I mean...
He is the most influential footballer of the modern era. Full stop.
Yeah,
he has revolutionised the whole game. Revolutionised midfield.
Yeah.
Remind the kickouts.
Have you noticed their shape for his kickouts? Like, I was noticing John Small and James McCarthy, they come down to the 21 and the cornerbacks just stand inside them. So there's four along the 21.
Yeah.
And then all the two wings are completely free and suddenly there's movement. The movement in midfield is like movement on a full forward, you know, traditional full forward line movement. That's the movement that lads out the field are dealing with oceans of space because the wing backs have been completely taken out. And it's funny, like, I was just noticed at the start of the game and consistently the two wing backs have no place in the kickouts. The only role they have is to get the hell out of there. Let's bring a man with you.
So you have to go zonal, in other words. You have to take a chance. And then he bobs it to you. Yeah.
That's what Kerry did. They didn't follow the wing backs. They kind of stayed, you know, outside them. And then you had your four and you were clapping your hands. And that was great. But Cluxton was back to his brilliant best.
How did you get on with him when you were with Parnells?
I will have told this story a few times. Not great. Not great. We got on grand when I used to make all the effort with him. But like when I actually stopped making much of an effort, I realised this lad never talks to me if I don't actually talk to him.
So you're wondering why you got no reaction from the Dublin camp. He's the captain.
Listen, Cluxton.
Woolley is a weirdo.
Any of his teammates would laugh when this. If you were to ask any of his teammates what's Cluxton like, to start laughing. Like, he's a unique type of character. You know him, Sam. He's a little bit strange. He's not like fellas I knock about with, but like. Nothing personal against him. He's a brilliant goalkeeper.
And what he is unbelievably driven. Like, if you, the shape he's in the shape of an outfield player.
Yeah.
Your best outfield player. Yeah. He's unbelievably driven. I did a lot of work years back in, you know, when sports science really came in the gym with him, and like he was working. When I started, at the end of a session, put the keepers in goal and try and take his head off at a few shots. That's the way it was back in the night.
Yeah.
To what it is today, that everything revolves around the keeper.
But the thing about the clubs, I always remember, and like you're right, like up in the gym, he's lifting more than anyone out the field. He's like, you know, all his stats are up there with lads out the field. But even scoring a goal in him in training pisses him right off. Right, I'm telling you. And it's not often I did it because he's a really good shot stopper. Yes, but when I'd score a goal in him, even in the kick around four, and Cluxton be getting up off the ground and he would be livid. Like, this is how crazy this fella is. That would annoy him and I'd celebrate it just to really... But like, that was obviously what makes them great. He does not want to concede anywhere, not even in the kick around before.
That's it. That's what makes him just so good. He's so driven.
Yeah, I'll tell you how good he was on Saturday. I was watching the game like everyone was, and I thought Paul Flynn's been quiet again, like so performance. And then Kieran Whelan says afterwards that he won four kickouts.
Yeah,
that's a big stat for anyone to get four kickouts. But that's how easy Cluxton's making it for everyone. Yeah. I didn't notice that Paul Flynn had gone and won these four possessions. Yeah. Like, it was just
in the second half when the pressure was on, when the shit was hitting the fan, he found his man 8 out of 10.
That's what I was going to say to you. And the big one to Kilkenny as well. That was a big one to win.
And a high risk one too.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, but that's when you want, like, all these kind of cliches, leaders, does it when it matters. Like, second half, all are in final replay. The tension is unbearable and you're going 8 out of 10. And these aren't 8 out of 10 to the cornerback. Like, he varied them more than I've seen him vary them in a long, long time.
Yeah, Stephen will put the ball into spaces where every other keeper will deem it too risky. They'll look at it and say, no chance, where Stephen's looking and saying, yes, there's a chance.
Yeah.
That is the difference.
Yeah, completely. All right, up next, we'll give our performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Yeah, before we get into that, we obviously played the dink ball into a crowded area.
Have there was a couple of...
Have we any examples? I haven't seen a dink ball into a crowded area since
I might need to bring my whiteboard in there and show you this.
There was
two brilliant ones. There was one late in the game yesterday where I think it was Carmo Costa, little fist pat Bernard. Was it into Costa, shipped it off to Bernard for one of Bernard's blocks. If you go back over them there, yeah. There was a lovely.
What was that dink ball into a crowded area?
It's not the foot.
Consternation everywhere.
Consternation around the D. Was there consternation around the D?
No, because Mayo were chasing the game, but there was a lot of space in there.
Can I just say, Fitzsimons had a very good game, but he's not in my performance of the weekend shortlist because of the balls he made at that last attack. That was nearly the losing of that game. It should have been a draw because Killian. Like, let's be honest, for him that was not a difficult free.
And he stole by 10 yards as
and
well.
And he moved in a little. I initially at the game didn't think he did, but looking at it on the replay or on the Sunday game, the highlights, he did actually get in a little bit. It's not a difficult free. He'll never forgive himself for that.
No, but he put it wide in the far post, you know.
But Fitzsimons, Jesus, mate, put that ball over yourself. I know you say to a cornerback, give it to a shooter, but you're completely free. Like, I mean, maybe that's why he's not on the team and the Philly McMahons and the Coopers they're putting that over.
Yeah. Oh, they're loving it. Brendan's not getting that ball. No way. He's screaming at him. Yeah.
No way. Actually, I said he's not on my shortlist. He actually is on my shortlist here now.
Undertaking him.
First on my shortlist is Kieran Kilkenny because I thought he had an outstanding game and he's been much maligned on the podcast in recent weeks, especially by me. But he completely turned it around. We mentioned him already. Brilliant player. You'd love to see him realise his full potential and the huge array of skill that he has. And he showed more of it than he had been showing on Sunday. Next one is Durkin. 2 points from play.
Downtown Durkin.
The second one was just as inspirational as the come. Like, he didn't even want to take this on. This is a criticism I have of some players that you're in that scoring range. You don't get these opportunities too much. Put the bloody thing over the bar. He almost just did it because there was nothing else on. And he's well within his scoring range. He's as accurate a wing back to score both with Casabar Mitchells and with Mayo as I've ever seen. I've never seen a wing back to be as accurate. He very rarely just puts it wide. He was outstanding. And I'm going to give the other performance of the weekend to Cormac Costello. It was between him and Michael Darren McCauley because you're coming on in an All-Ireland final. But Cormac Costello won the game for Dublin.
Dermot Connolly.
Forget about it. This is my shortlist. We know who yours is. You would probably give it to Dermot Connolly even though he's not nominated.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Cormac Costello won the All-Ireland for Dublin. Very, very simple. And you say that, oh, that was easy because, you know, he got a couple of handy scores. But, like, why was no one else getting the handy scores before he came on? He just has a knack. And what he has a knack...
They weren't handy either. They were great scores.
Yeah, they were great. Well, they were handy finishes. But maybe, I suppose, he got into that. To get into those positions
taking
and put them over.
And
he's the ultimate player to come on in that scenario when the game's opened up. And he just goes for it. You know what I mean? And he's happy... for that to be his role. I'm still not sure he'll be a starter for Dublin, but I'm like, I mean, that maybe he's the new Kevin McManaman.
He'll be a starter when the lads retire.
Yeah,
he's not, once they're around, he's not going to get in.
He went into a lull for a couple of years. Yeah, he's only back.
Remember
again.
He started 2014 when Donegal bet Dublin that hammering.
Right,
he started. But the ones off his left, which you're saying he made look easy, James missed one of them himself and he would have put your house on it. So high pressure situation going in off the bench and kicking two of them. I think they were difficult. He could have dropped them short. Kev Mack dropped them short. Yeah. You remember? Like, no, I think they were super scores.
Super scores. And the one falling back, obviously, that's the one that won the All-Ireland for Dublin. Michael Darragh, we've already mentioned his.
He had the free there. Yeah. The ref had his hand up for the advantage. But still, he let it go ahead.
Blown for a free. So a beautiful, beautiful score and a brilliant performance. I'm going to go for Cormac Costello. Who's next?
I'll go. So it's Costello, Durkin and Fitzsimons.
No, Fitzsimons didn't make it. Kilkenny.
Oh, Costello, Durkin, Kilkenny. Right, I'll go Dermot Connolly then. but honestly, this is sort of...
Have you read his piece about Dermot Connolly?
No.
Thank you. I was going to look at the
result. Is it recent? Is it?
No, you wrote
just
it yesterday.
I haven't read it. No, it's on sportsju.ie. I'll send you on the link. Yeah. But it sort of sums it up. It's like...
Jesus Connolly.
Actually called him divine at some stage in there. But it's like the saddest thing about his genius is that some people will deny it to their graves. Like, people don't like Jeremy Connolly doing well. Like, and even I made the point to you earlier,
but can I pull you up on that? Who are these people?
Because Jesus, type them on the Twitter, like, for one. And I know Twitter's not a good population sample, but
no,
like,
too many hate for
it's
people.
It's either he's great or he's shit. It's either he's innocent or he's guilty or he's likable or he's the most unlikable man in the world, to put it nicely. But it's just, it just seemed like we were arguing, I know it was a black card thing, and like, you know, most people probably agree with you, actually, but a fella came up to me and said, stop defending Connolly. It's like, don't know what you're talking about, just stop defending him. But like, this man, like, what he can do with a football is just pure magic. And I know he's not on your list, but like, can we just talk about him for a while? Because
we did
something else. And that penalty, like the pressure he was on, just sits it down, as he said, take a breath, put it in the corner, walk away. And that's how good he is. I just love that ability in someone. But obviously it's not just ability, it's pure sort of work rate as well. So anyway, yeah, I'll go.
Conan, you need to go to the Dublin Club Championship. Honestly, you do. Yeah. On a calm night. Do you know the lovely autumn nights and watch Dermot Kelly in action when he's in front
of him? He runs amok in some of those.
It's just unbelievable what he does. And there's a sort of a collective of people just looking at each other, nodding their heads, going, brilliant, brilliant.
That's another thing that frustrates me about Connolly and the role he's given. As in, let him do that at inter-county level, because he can, you know. And it's stop making a Ferrari do a bloody tractor's work. Like, you know what I mean? That makes sense.
It's a good saying.
Mickford Symes deserves great mention, I think. It's absolutely fantastic. But for Cormac to come on and kick 3 points, a guy forgotten about, you can't believe everything you hear, that he'd be moving well in training, and he certainly proved it. And I think he grew as a man, and that's going to stand him. The more than Paddy Andrews kicking the 5 points last year in Keith Diggins, I thought that made Paddy Andrews, his confidence has been sky high, even though he's dogged with injuries. I think this has made Cormac Costello.
Yeah, okay, so Cormac Costello. Congratulations, you're getting the performance of the week, our last performance of the weekend of the whole summer. That's the All-Ireland final, done and dusted. Dublin, unbelievable champions. That's us dusted for our Monday shows. We're moving to Wednesdays now for the rest of the year. We'll be back with the 2 shows a week when the National League starts again next year. Wednesday night, or Wednesdays, from here on in until the club championship finishes. We'll see you all next Wednesday then. Good luck.
Ring a ring a rosy, as the light declines, I'll remember Dublin City in the rare old times. Raised on songs and stories, heroes of renown, the passing tales and glories that once was Dublin town, the hallowed halls and houses, the haunting children's rhymes, that once was Dublin city in the rare old times. Ring a ring a rosy, as the light declines, I'll remember Dublin city in the rare old times. My name it is Sean Dempsey, as Dublin as could be, born hard and late in Pimlico, in a house that ceased to be. By trade I was a cooper, lost out to redundancy, like my house that fell to progress, my trade's a memory. And I courted Peggy Dignan, as pretty as you please, a rogue and child of Mary, from the rebel liberties. I lost her to a student chap, with skin as black as coal, when he took her off to Birmingham, she took away my soul. Ring a ring a rosy, as the light declines, I'll remember Dublin city in the rain. have made me bitter. The gargle dims me brain, 'cause Dublin keeps on changing and nothing seems the same. The pillar and the Met have gone, the Royal long since pulled down, as the grey unyielding concrete makes a city of my town. Ring a ring a rosy, as the light declines, I remember Dublin city in the rare old times. Fare thee well, sweet Anna Liffey, I can no longer stay and watch the new glass cages that spring up along the quay. My mind's too full of memories, too old to hear new chimes. I'm a part of what was Dublin in the rare old times. Ring a ring a rosy, as the light declines, I'll remember Dublin city in the rare old times. Ring a ring a rosy, as the light declines, I'll remember Dublin city in the rare.